So I'm going to read from some recent translations that Ajahn Kavali just sent Lompur Pasana, which were done by a four-pansa Canadian monk named Hans Seleko. And these are from this book, which probably most people have seen, branches and twigs of the Bodhinyana kind of tree. And it's all different disciples of Lompur Cha. And there are three different...
It was done at Ajahn Jandi's monks. Ajahn Jandi did the book, and it was printed in... That was not this past December, the last December, for the opening of his new sort of Ajahn Chah building, sala, and it's a it's a whole series of kind of interviews, short interviews with people's experiences of. being with Ajahn Chah, and it goes like from the more senior up down to Ajahn
Uthay.
Ajahn Uthay, and he's I don't know, he'd be 25 months or something. He's the junior one in it, so it's, I'm about 30 or something.
24. 24, I think, 27.
Yeah, so it's there's lots of monks.
Yeah, these three monks, three bios, are mostly contemporary of Ajahn Sumedho, maybe? Ajahn Kun, Ajahn Thun.
Yeah, Ajahn Thun was there when Ajahn Sumedho arrived. He was already with Ajahn Chah. Ajahn Kun came about the same time, and then Ajahn Chu came after it. Ajahn Chu is actually senior, but he came after because he mentions in there he came around the time of Ajahn Mahamon. Ajahn Mahamon came after Ajahn Sumedho was already there.
There's probably different people doing all the different interviews with different senior monks, different people doing the interviews, so it's not one person doing
it. Oh, yeah, I mean, some of it is interviews, some of it is things that might have been written, some of the things are from talks that have been given at different times, so it's quite a task to actually gather it all together.
The first one is Lompo Tun Chittasalo. And I didn't look up the Thai, so there's various Thai things throughout here, and I probably won't be getting the tones right. And it's also because it was an interview. There's often times when he would be telling a joke, but it might not come across with the way that I speak. So in here, as well as in the book, it just says laughs. So everyone can fill in the laughter.
Well, some of it might not even be a joke. It's just sort of thinking about something from the past. Just relating something that was a bit different.
So Lompur Tun from Wat Tham Sang Pet. So I came to spend Pansa at Wat Nong Pa Pong in the year 1964. At that time, however, there were only 8 monks and 2 novices. Including Lompur Cha, there were altogether 11 monks. The Wat Nong Pa Pong of the beginning years cannot be compared with how it is at present. These days, there is both decline and progress. In those days, there wasn't much business. If there was any, then it would be building work. During that period, the hall was built, but Lompur Cha didn't encourage building. Instead, what he stressed was the practice of Khor Wat. There wasn't any electricity, and Lompur Cha was close with the monks. If any monk didn't walk Jongkrom, didn't sit Samadhi, or came late for anything, Lompur would poke him directly. This gave rise to alertness, and no one dared to sneak around. Lompur Cha was dedicated to teaching. Whoever could stay there would stay, and those who couldn't would run away. Lompur Cha said bluntly, "Should anyone run away from me, that's no shame to me, because I have already taught with my full effort." He was decisive. In that era, external business was next to nothing. Monks thus had more time to put forth effort in their practice than they do these days. They also had more patient endurance, as food was more scarce. In that era, problems within the Sangha were few. Lompoar Cha said, "It's not necessary to go and interrogate anyone. Whether something is totally wrong or just a little wrong, it will be known in one's own heart." When it came to the matter of undertaking pariwasa, one of the disciplinary, pretty serious disciplinary transactions, he wasn't sympathetic. He said, "How could you go and do something like that? If a monk aims like that, he'll never survive." He strongly emphasized that our actions themselves are what is important. Whether we know or don't know, are capable or incapable, doesn't matter so much. However, if Lompoar Cha saw monks walking jhonkrom a lot, sitting samadhi a lot, not speaking, chatting little, then he would show his support. During the period of taking the Dhamma exams, he would allow us the opportunity to chat with each other. But once the exams were finished, he would call a meeting to start putting forth effort and stop chatting. During Pansa, we kept the Mukhavata, which meant total abstention from chatting throughout the whole monastery. In the Vinaya, there is an offense for practicing complete abstention from speech. So, Lompoar Cha said, "I allow the opportunity only to ask questions. If anyone in the community has a question, then they may come to me with it." When there was no chatting, then there was no socializing at Kutis. Instead, there was application of effort. If there was a monk who only gave regard to eating and sleeping, or if he was somehow involved in deception, then Lompoar would have me go and fetch him, and then bring him to Lompoar for a piercing scolding. These days, the numbers of monks and novices is many, and there are many branch monasteries. But when there is many, the problems are also many. Sometimes the turmoil even reaches the Kruba Ajahn. The Sangha must meet together and discuss in order to find resolutions. Sometimes I feel that calling for questioning those who have been dishonest is such a burdensome and difficult affair. Sometimes these problems come about even with those who are quite senior. It is like this because our surroundings have changed. Before, there weren't any mobile phones, which have both good aspects and drawbacks. The good aspect is that they facilitate communication. If there's any news, then we can hear about it. The drawback is that they can also facilitate wrongdoing, such as using them to chat with women in places secluded to the ear. They are something that can give rise to shame. In that era, there weren't any newspapers or radios. There was a tape recorder because the foreign monks had brought it in. In fact, these things aren't shameful, but they can bring about shame if people use them to do so. Back then, these things weren't around. Even our robes, if Lompoar saw a monk wearing a flashy colored robe, he would criticize him. If he saw a fat monk, he would criticize him too, saying, "He eats a lot and sleeps a lot, so he's so fat." Before entering Pansa, after the monks who would be spending the Pansa had been accepted by Lompoar, he would ask, "This year, will anyone be taking on any special core wats?" One then had to inform the Sangha, or if any monk still didn't yet have a special core wat for himself, he would be told to go think it over. He would take on practices such as eating only the food one receives on Bindapat, fasting, or refraining from lying down posture continually for 15 days. For some monks, if having practice and their minds still wouldn't gather, he would encourage them to fast. The monks who stayed at Wat Bapong in that area considered Lompoar Jan as a big brother. If you were going to go on Tudong, then you had to take leave of Lompoar Jan. After paying respects to Lompoar Cha, he would tell you to go and take leave of Lompoar Jan also. When going to take leave of Lompoar Jan, he would give his blessing saying, "Sadhu, sadhu. May you obtain the eye that sees the Dhamma. May you realize the Dhamma. I will stay here and sweep the leaves, waiting for you. I will upatak the Kruba Ajahn here, waiting for you." Once returning from Tudong, we would go pay respects to Lompoar Jan again. He was the one who would go and inform Lompoar Cha that some monks had come to request a penance. In those days, we didn't yet refer to him as Lompoar Cha. We called him Kruba Ajahn Tao. Once we had taken to penance, Lompoar Cha would raise Lompoar Jan as an example of someone who wasn't arrogant or out for gains. The number of monks in that era was few, so we felt the same as brothers. We were open with one another in all matters. When we were apart, we would still think about and visit each other. If we can uphold the core wat the same as when Lompoar Cha was still alive, things wouldn't decline easily. In the end, it's an issue of ourselves. I once attended a meeting with some administration monks. They reported that Christian and Muslims will come to destroy the sasana. I thought, yes, they probably can destroy it. if we venture beyond the boundary of the Dhamma Vinaya. When we follow desire, follow the kilesas, or follow our hearts, then things slacken. The pindapatawata can also slacken, the practice of going on pindapat, alms round. They stab directly at the head, that is, the abbot. The reason is, because if things can be arranged with the head, then other affairs won't be difficult. I once went to Laos and saw decline. They had never seen our kind of practice. They said we were strict. Seeing us chanting, they said we were strict. They only went on pindapat during pansa. After pansa, they stopped. Lompo Cha strongly emphasized the Dutanga Vatas and the five Kamatanas, hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, skin, which is not continually contemplated by us, which, if not continually contemplated by us, will also decline. The monks we met in Laos could stay in the robes just the same, but they only went that far. There wasn't any coolness, and they didn't obtain any peace. They were simply living there together as a group, together with amisa, or material objects, only the material aspects of the holy life. If we love our Kruba Ajahns and friends within Lompor Cha's network, then we should keep the practice of Khor Wat without violating it. If we violate it, there's nowhere to hide, nowhere that is bright. Even if you do it alone, the dukkha is still with you alone. The Kruba Ajahn doesn't see it, but we do. It creates turmoil, and it burns oneself. Wherever you go, you will carry that fault with you in your heart. It is like poisonous venom, so be aware. But if we reveal our wrong actions to the Kruba Ajahn, then the dukkha will decrease by 50%. If the Khor Wat slipped only a little, Lompor Cha would rebuke us immediately. But if it's left like that, then it will become habitual and get out of control. Sometimes he would allow the evening meetings to be suspended, and we would only meet to practice together in the mornings. He did this so that the monks would be dedicated, who were dedicated could put forth effort fully and completely. In the past era, Wat Nompa Pong didn't have a big occasion for everyone to come and practice together. The reason why we do this on the day of Lompor Cha's passing is because it allows the Kruba Ajahns and disciples of the various branch monasteries an opportunity to meet with each other. This is something good, but really, Kamatana is something we have to practice all the time. If we only do work, then the state of our Kamatana will slacken. I helped plaster the walls of Wat Nompa Pong together with the other monks. I wasn't a cement worker, but I did it until I was skilled. I plastered cement continuously for a long time, lacking sitting and walking meditation to the point where whenever it was time to sit in meditation, I would fall right asleep sitting there. I felt exhausted, so I took leave of Lompor Cha to go on Tudong. He recommended a place to stay and meditate. Sometimes he would send me to Wat Kuen or Wat Tham Sang Pet. If I was able to go off and do that, then I would be at ease, because I would put forth effort. This is the mechanism that allows us to stay. Once a foundation has been established, the mind returns. I asked Lompor for permission to disrobe many times. He would allow the other monks who came with me to disrobe, but not myself. He told me that we could talk in a little while, and then ask the other monks who were there to go and join the chanting in the meeting hall. After that, he told me that I could go and give him a massage at his kuti. I didn't know how to massage, and when I had finished, Lompor said that it hurt worse than before. Then he gave me a desana, saying, "Can't you throw it away for just one lifetime? I'll help you throw it away. I've thrown it away just the same. Take this in exchange for your life. Hand over your body and life to the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Noble Sangha for just one lifetime. Throw everything else away and let the world have it." I just sat there, listening with my hands in anjali. Afterwards, he used a soft stick, saying, "You have to lure it as you would a small dog. If you still can't catch it, then toss a ball of rice at it so that it will keep chasing after you. Then, one day, you'll be able to catch it." He compared it to in this way. Lompor Cha would often mention Lompor Tongrat and Lompor Ginari as examples in using strategy to subdue the kilesas. He gave me the example of when Lompor Tongrat wanted to disrobe. Lompor Tongrat would go into the middle of the forest alone and cry out, "Come look at the monk who wants to disrobe." Finally, Lompor Cha told me to walk Jongkrom without stopping, to put forth effort without stopping. I held on to what he said and hid away to memorize the Padimokkha alone in the middle of the forest. Lompor Cha gave me the name Venerable Burning Fire because my mind was hot. Even when I couldn't grab a foothold in meditation, I'd still force myself to do it. Now that I'm more than 60 years old, things have become cool, and I understand my debt of gratitude towards our Kruba Ajahn. He lured this little dog to the point where it was been able to stay until the present day. I was just a little dog. Wherever I am, thinking of this, my tears flow. The monks and novices of today are probably the same as I was at that age. Although we may have thoughts of transgressing our sila, the Dhamma Vinaya won't let us follow them. Let them be only thoughts. Oppose the mind, restrain it, and endure it. Lompo Cha said, when we feel diligent, we act. When we feel lazy, we act. I have held to this principle, and it is the way I teach my disciples. At present, there are 5 to 7 monks living together with me. I tell them to go and light the lanterns for walking Dzongkhrom, and I walk too. These days, I don't just teach. I also show them by example. Sometimes I ring the bell to get their attention and then go and sit in samadhi in the meeting hall. Then I'll lead the chanting and read out and explain Pubhasika, the Vinaya training manual. If there's anyone who doesn't understand, I'll have them ask. I do this so they will understand the Buddha's teaching. Lompo Cha read out the Pubhasika both inside and outside of Pansa. Whenever I had some doubt over a particular rule, I would request the opportunity to respectfully ask him about it. If there was any point that wasn't clear, he would take out the book to check, and we would discuss it. Sometimes some monks from Wat Nong Papong would go to other monasteries to practice, and then discover that some of our practices were incorrect. When they came to respectfully inform Lompo Cha about it, he would say, "If it's wrong, then we have to correct it, because we don't grasp and cling." Lompo Cha didn't cling inflexibly to external matters. He allowed things to be correct, and each issue would be resolved according to the situation. There have been occasions when administration monks or laypeople didn't understand certain matters of Vinaya. Acting to protect my teacher, I was able to explain these things clearly to them. In living together with a Kruba Ajahn, one has to know how to be observant, because they are scrupulous. Sometimes he was firm, and sometimes he was lenient. But even when he was lenient, he never slipped. Lompo Cha often gave desanas from dusk until midnight. If he saw a monk sneak away, he would sometimes say, "All of you are only sitting and listening, but I'm doing both sitting and talking, and yet you still can't compete with me in endurance." What he said was really true. On Wan Pra in that era, even when Lompo wasn't at the monastery, we all still practiced Nesajik. That is sitting practice. Lompo Cha said, "If you follow the various core wats that I have guided you in, there will not be any decline. There will only be prosperity." During the last Pansa that Lompo Cha spent at Wat Tham Seng Phet, I had the opportunity to talk with him nearly all through the night. He spoke about various branch monasteries, saying, "Each monk has built up his barami differently. Some monks don't teach well, but have many disciples. Some monks teach well, but don't have any samaneras to help wash their feet. At present, it's just like," he said. He told me, "After I have gone, don't fight over the bones like a dog. Some monks claim to be disciples of Wat Nong Papong, but their monastery is a mess. The toilets are filthy to the extent that we can't even raise the Wat Nong Papong branch monastery sign. But if we conduct ourselves well, then that will be good in and of itself." Sometimes Lompo Cha would say, "Tun, you should allow other monks to come upatak too. If you only do it alone, then the other monks won't know how to do it. So I called on the monks to come and train in upataking Lompo Cha. If one was able to upatak the Kruba Ajahn, one would then feel proud having practiced the core wat. Whether it was washing or wiping his feet, folding his robe, arranging his sleeping place, washing his bowl, or drying his bowl. If we were able to teach the other monks and novices to do it, then these skills would be continually passed down." Lompo Cha also upataked Lompo Ginri in the same way. He did it to be an example for his disciples. "If we can do it like this, then no matter where we go, we won't feel awkward or embarrassed. When you are a young monk, you have to be strict by doing things such as eating out of only one vessel and practicing sitter's practice, which these days are the norm for monks in our Sangha. But in recent years, I've allowed myself to slacken since I'm already old. It's not the same as before. When I had not yet reached 50 years of age, I could still live alone. But in the 2 years that have just passed, I haven't been able to go pindapat because I can't keep up with the group. I also have a problem with dizziness these days too. But I tell my disciples about it in the past, how it was in the past. I tell these stories like this to alert sati, mindfulness in the community. I don't consider myself a Kruba Ajahn, only a mentor, and my character is such that I can't speak beautifully. But the meaning that I wish to convey is simple. May we bear in mind the state of Buddhism as a whole. Wrongdoing is something that even if no one else sees, we still know it in our hearts. It is poison, being stored up right there in our own hearts. If we know for ourselves that we can't bear staying in robes without committing wrongdoing, then rather than bringing trouble to the Sangha, we should just make up our minds to go. It's easier to go. Some matters are a pain to interrogate people about. There is dishonesty, and it's wicked. We mustn't let our actions stain the religion. May I leave this for my good friends in the holy life to contemplate.
I would assume that that was a talk at the one of the annual gatherings of at Ajahn Chah's, commemorating Ajahn Chah's passing. It's just a guess, just kind of a tone.
Was that consistent? It sounds like from all the stories I've heard about Lumpur Cha that there was still some consistency around how he taught monks in a large community as how he taught monks in a small community. Like when he had 11, it sounds like he was very much involved in just constantly training monks.
He was also younger.
So he had more energy, but I mean all the people would just seem like there was no way, but he referred to Ajahn Jun. Was he around when you were training?
Yeah, Lumpur Cha was already heading up a monastery, Bunkaluo, and when I was there. But there's still other senior monks. There's in Paliya, Ajahn Chu, Ajahn Kampun. So that there was several senior monks. Who would be helping Ajahn Chah. It's like the one on Ajahn Chu talks about his helping Ajahn Chah, looking after the coordination and taking on different duties. So they're also Ajahn Chah went in different phases of letting things, and that's even Ajahn Sumedho's time before other Westerners came. Ajahn Sumedho kind of got upset at Ajahn Chah because he wasn't getting on people as much as he thought he should be, and Ajahn Chah would let things take their course, and then he would pull it together and fall apart. So that is a natural kind of a sequence of events.
Was it Ajahn Jayasaras of Ajahn Kun? Was that what we heard in that talk? Did you know about the Ajahn Jayasaras staying in Pansa with Ajahn Kun? He talked about that in a very humorous way with the novices who he stayed with who were quite misbehaved. And he was saying they were like throwing kicks at his head and doing all kinds of funny things. And he had to endure this until this one novice who really hated him, he was able to get away in the mornings on Bindabat. He'd go 15 minutes early and walk quietly on Bindabat. It was this kind of time for quiet away from the novices. And this one novice found out. So then every morning he'd walk right behind him, almost stepping on his heels, banging in his bowl. So he said that Ajahn Kun just tried to bear with this and sort of like what you were saying with Ajahn Chah and just tried to encourage his sannyas, but he didn't have that energy to keep, keep.
Well, Ajahn Kun is a very different personality as well. Actually, there's a writing that's very translated. Ajahn Kun was called. I mean, his name. When they referred to Ajahn, because there was two Ajahn Kuns around the same age, same era. And this was an Ajahn Khun and Ajahn Jai Sarno stayed with, was called Ajahn Khun Mute. And sort of as, you know, somebody who doesn't speak. So that was his temperament.
Yeah, it was funny, he said that he had the whole, there was just two other monks and then all these novices, he had them just start practicing at 5 p.m. and then continue until Bindabat every day. And Ajahn Jayasaro, and then later on he asked him, so how's it going? Ajahn Jayasaro was with these other two monks, one who was super energetic and the other one he didn't know was taking powder caffeine or something. So they were, he was comparing himself to them. He said, I'm just not making it, you know, I don't know how you do it. You know, I know you go back to your kuti at 8 and, you know, you're, but I just can't, I'm just trying to keep up with the schedule. He said, how do you stay up? And he said, oh, I don't. I go to bed at 8. So it sounded pretty humorous at that time. But
Ajahn Khun is really great.